On this episode of the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, it's the season 4 finale. We talk about some upcoming changes, my review on Clown in a Cornfield, and we delve into the amazing mind of our new friend, Christopher Lee Jansen. So let's go.
Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Oh, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. I am your host, Ghost Joe, and welcome to the season 4 finale. Man, I can't believe I've been doing this stuff for 4 seasons, and it's actually like the 5th year, too. So this has been an amazing ride, man. And you know what? I'm not stopping anytime soon. In fact, we have some amazing changes coming up. So I'm going to get into it right now, actually, for you. So next Friday, we will be premiering season 5. And by the way, we don't take any time off here. So it's going to be next week. All right. There's no waiting for a season or waiting a few weeks. No, ladies and gentlemen. We keep going. So next week, which is June, Friday the 13th, we will be premiering season 5, episode 1. Now, let me tell you a little bit. So there are going to be a few changes going on, but great changes, as you'll see. So of course, Edgegrave Dave will still be providing us with the awesome horror reviews that he does. And John Wright will still be educating us with his expertise in everything paranormal related. But we are adding a new team member, everybody. That's right. Starting next week, we will be joined by our new co-host, Ken, nickname undetermined yet. He originally had a podcast called Somewhere in Dreamland, and not long ago, we connected and had an awesome time chatting about everything spooky. He has an awesome outlook on everything paranormal and everything as well, as I'm getting to know him and everything. As I hope I give you guys some good entertaining content as well. Of course, the Natman will still be part of the show, but he is going through some health issues at the moment. So we wish him all the best and to hurry up and come back to the show in a full-time manner as he was. And yeah, so feel better, buddy. Another change is that we will be trying to focus on specific topics for an entire episode, tackling some amazing subjects. This is something I actually haven't done really, because I'm always throwing different things out in every show. But we're going to try and do this specific topic thing going on. And we hope you guys enjoy it. Let us know if you do, too. And give us a call if you have any paranormal experiences, because we'd love to put it on the show. The number is 845-600-0744, or you could email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. So there will be some more things announced as time goes on, as we continue to expand and explore more. Also, check out the show notes for our Bonfire t-shirt store. I added 4 new designs, and when purchased, the money that we would make from the purchase goes directly to 4 different charities. So it's for a great cause. Please check that out. Please buy something because it's awesome. And also, in just a moment, we're going to be talking with Christopher Lee Jansen. He's an amazing guy. He tells us all about his fascinating experiences as a medium, tarot master, paranormal investigator, and astral projectionist. First, though, let's talk about a movie that I recently saw that kind of fell beyond the wayside for some reason, Clown in a Cornfield. So I'm going to do this review, right? I am not Edgegrave Dave, so I am not going to try to be. You know, I am Ghost Joe, right? So I'm going to just do what I do. And that's all I really know how to do, right? So anyway, let's talk about Clown in a Cornfield, all right? It was directed by Eli Craig, and it's based on the book series by Adam Cesari. This slasher leans hard into 80s, 90s horror vibes while keeping things fresh. If you're looking for a film that delivers suspense, gore, and a little social satire, this one's definitely got you covered. The story kicks off with teenager Quinn Maybrook, played by the talented Katie Douglas, and her dad, played by Aaron Abrams, moving to the tiny town of Kettle Hill, Missouri, after a family tragedy. It's a classic horror setup, you know, new kid in town, eerie vibes, you know the drill. Quinn struggles to adjust to small town life, but quickly befriends a local group of kids. Now, here's where things get a little unsettling. The adults in this town seem they seem off, right? They're obsessed with enforcing good old-fashioned discipline, blaming the younger generation for everything wrong in society. The town's Founders Day is a celebration of the Bay Pen Corn Syrup Factory that once kept Kettle Hill alive, featuring a mascot named Frendo, a cheerful clown with a sinister edge. And that's where I'm going to leave the plot details, because trust me, the rest is a wild ride and you really got to see it for yourself. Think Scream, but with a unique twist. There's a masked killer, or is there? And the kills are incredibly well-crafted, relying on practical effects rather than the cheap CGI or AI-generated gore. It's a refreshing throwback to real horror craftsmanship, and I loved every bloody second of it. What really sets this film apart is the humor sprinkled throughout, especially the jabs at us Gen X and millennial folks. One standout moment is when a group of teens desperately tried to call for help with a rotary phone, utterly confused about how to use it. The dialogue is sharp, with Quinn delivering some solid one-liners. One of my favorites is, when your dad asks you if you want to learn how to drive stick, you effing say yes. And there's plenty more, man. You got to know the context of the movie to get that one. But this movie is fast-paced, entertaining, and packed with twists that'll keep you hooked. It doesn't overcomplicate the story, but still delivers solid suspense. I'm not going to give it grave ratings because that's Edgegrave Dave's thing, but I will say I give it a 3.5 out of 5. If you're a fan of slashers with a modern bite, definitely go see it.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
So today we have an exceptional guest, Christopher Lee Jansen, a spiritual advisor, medium, and tarot master with over 3 decades of experience. Christopher has not only helped countless clients navigate their spiritual journeys, but has also explored the depths of the paranormal world. From leading development circles to investigating haunted locations, his world blends intuition, tradition, and curiosity. Let's uncover the stories, wisdom, and secrets Christopher has to share. What's going on, Christopher? How you doing, man?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good, man. You've been reading tarot since you were 10, what I read?
I have.
Wow. Could you tell us about your journey from picking up the deck for the first time to becoming a master tarot reader? And what does that entail exactly?
You know, at this point, I can't remember which happened first. If I acquired that first deck of tarot cards or had a pretty major prophetic dream. I don't know which one of those things happened first, but they were both right around the same time at 10 years old. And those two events were really crucial in setting me down my path. You know what every 10-year-old does with birthday money from grandma and grandpa? They're like, let's go out and buy a deck of tarot cards.
So how do you blend traditional tarot knowledge with your intuition during readings? How do you blend them together?
I let someone ask me a question, and before I even turn any cards over, I'm already giving them a reading, just speaking from my gut, before even seeing anything that's in front of me. And now in recent years, I don't use traditional tarot spreads as much as I used to. I've become completely feral in a sense. When somebody asks me a question or says, I want to focus on this and this, I'll throw these compilations down on the table and say, this represents this, this represents this. And we're going to look at how that meets in the middle. So the spreads I throw down for people, I may never even see them again because it's so in the moment.
Obviously, there's not an infinite amount of cards. So like, when you throw them down, I mean, is your interpretation going to be different from another tarot reader's interpretation of the same card?
Oh, it certainly can be, especially for anybody who reads from an intuitive place. It can absolutely be a different interpretation. And part of what goes into that interpretation is not only what the cards say, but the energy between me and the individual in front of me. The energy between that individual and another reader would be entirely different. And I really think that energy has a lot to do with the interpretation and the message that comes through.
Now, can you share a memorable experience from leading mediumship development circles? What exactly is that?
I teach people how to do what I do, whether it's how to tap into it, how to control it, how to do it safely, how to turn it off when you need to. And yes, I'll definitely share a memorable experience. So when I mentioned around the same time I acquired my first deck of cards, I had a pretty powerful prophetic dream. That dream was about my mother's best friend. I had a dream that she passed away. And she was a healthy 42-year-old woman. There was nothing in the world wrong with her that anybody, much less a 10-year-old boy, should be thinking about her death or dying. 3 days later, she died. She died of a brain aneurysm. And I've discovered since that whenever I have a dream of someone passing away, it's 3 days. So leading up to one particular mediumship development circle, I had a dream that my aunt had passed away. And when I woke from that dream, I thought, okay, there's nothing I really need to do here. She'd been ill for many, many years. So this was not a surprise. In mediumship development circle, this would have been 3 days after the dream, I was leading them in an exercise where they took a sheet of paper and anointed it with a hand-blended spirit oil for connecting to spirit, held it over their heart chakra, and then they were supposed to hold it over the top of a lit candle, not in the flame, obviously. You don't want the paper to start on fire, but just enough where when they move it around, the paper will start to brown. And then they look at the images on the paper and interpret that as a message from spirit. And as I'm going to demonstrate this, I'm thinking, who do I want to reach out to? And the first person that pops into my head is my aunt. And I went, that's not right. Like, she's still alive. Like, that's not right. And then I went to move on and I'm trying to think of someone else. And just she pops back into my head. All right, we're going to do this. So I'm holding this paper over my heart chakra. I'm thinking of my aunt. I bring it up over the top of the flame. It's probably this much room between the flame and the paper. And the paper just erupts in flames. I managed to put it out quickly enough to salvage most of it. And I looked at one side. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. And I looked at the other side and I thought, I've got to sit down. So I sat down and I showed everybody the first side of the paper. And I said, what do you see? And somebody said, I see a woman sitting in a chair. That's what I was seeing as well. My aunt had been confined to a chair for many years. I flip it over. I said, what do you see? And somebody says, I see a woman dancing. That's what I saw as well. Then my phone rang and I got the call that my aunt had just passed away. As I've had a number of years to sit with this, I feel like she was stuck. I feel like she was right there on the threshold and she didn't know how to let go. And just maybe she needed someone to call her and to say, it's going to be okay. And maybe that was the push she needed to let go. So I am absolutely at peace with how that played out. I mean, she was going to pass anyway. She'd been in hospice care by that point. I mean, I woke up from the dream and saw a post that she'd gone into hospice care. So I knew it was coming. But I feel like she needed some help on a spiritual level. Somehow I feel like I did that for her. At least I hope I did.
Wow. As far as you had said, you know, you get this 3 days, you know, and somebody passes away type thing. This wasn't exactly for me. One of my mom had passed away about 13, 14 years ago now it is. And it's going to be 15 years, actually. Crazy. I know that I had seen
my mom within the first 3 days of her passing before the funeral and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that those first 3 or 4 days or something like that are like the most powerful. Is that something you've heard as well? Like, are they not crossed over before, you know, like, does it take a couple days or something? Like, what?
My interpretation isn't so much that those first few days, they're not crossed over. It's more that they're still trying to figure things out. You know, they're in an entirely new perspective from where they were. And it's like, imagine being lifted up out of your home and set in a different home and told, this is your home now. Like, what? I've never been here before. I think that's what the first few days are like for them. Like, they have to learn how to navigate their current perspective.
Wow. And also, in your description just before too, about what you teach people, you had said that you teach people how to harness the ability and how to turn it off. The way I've always seen, you know, mediumship abilities, I always kind of think of that scene in Ghost when Patrick Swayze is singing mm-hmm. to, you know, sing the Whoopi Goldberg, I am Henry VIII, I am, and she can't like turn it off, you know? That's kind of how I always envision it. So there is kind of an off switch in a way?
For me, there is. And, you know, my boundaries with spirits work just as easily as my boundaries with the living. I mean, to me, no is a sentence. Like, my home is very quiet. I've got haunted objects everywhere in this house. And generally, my home is very quiet. I don't get bothered. So for me, there is very much an off switch when I'm intent on relaxing and being at peace. And that's what I've got my mind on. That's what's going to happen.
When I was leaving the Mid-Orange Correctional Facility a couple of weeks ago, when I got in my car, because I had a couple experiences there. When I got in my car, I said, listen, if there's anybody following me right now, if there's anybody with me, please stay where you are. Do not follow me home. Stay here. Does that actually work? Like, is that something that actually works? Like, I mean, or is that just kind of just for the person really to make yourself feel better, basically?
I think it does. I mean, I know a number of people who do that all the time, and they seem to tell me that it works for them. I encourage people to do it. Yet at the same time, I don't ever do it myself. And I don't know why I don't. I just don't. But I encourage people to do it if it makes them feel better. I've got 4 Ouija boards in my car at all times. One of them I use to only communicate with one particular spirit who is more or less a spirit guide. He gets his own board, and there's signals that I like to see, so I know that I'm communicating with him. One of the boards I only use at the Fairfield County Infirmary in Lancaster, Ohio. I'm their house psychic, so I've spent a lot of time there connecting to those spirits. And if I happen to use a board there, I want a board that's only been touched by the energy of that building. I have a third one that if I'm in a location and think, all right, a board might be a good fit, I'm open to using that in different places and taking on different energies. And the fourth one is actually my own personal board. I've recently released my own board that people can buy, and it's got my logo and my signature on it. So I've had some fantastic experiences with them. I teach people how to use them respectfully. I think that's one of the first and foremost things, is using them respectfully. That's huge. The other thing I was going to, with the story you told, when you said you've got to go back to wherever you came from, one night I was leaving the Fairfield County Infirmary. I was about 6 miles down the road. I looked in my rearview mirror, and the man whose spirit is in room 308 was in the back seat of my car. I could see him in the rearview mirror, and I slammed on the brakes, and I was like, no, no, this is not okay. We're not doing this. You've got to go back. And his energy dissipated very quickly. So, of course, the next time I was there, my first stop in the building was room 308. Like, what is this? What just happened? So I ended up getting the story of what happened to him at that intersection. The accident that paralyzed him and took the life of his wife occurred at that intersection. And he was looking for his wife. So picture me going back to that intersection at 2 a.m. It's dark. It's the middle of nowhere. And here I am roaming around the field trying to connect to who turned out to be a very angry woman.
Can you describe one paranormal investigation that, I mean, I guess other than that one, that deeply impacted you, especially in a haunted location? Is there one that really stands out to you?
Yes, absolutely. And this is like a two-parter. It took a couple years to really unfold. So my first visit to the Licking County Jail in Newark, Ohio, by complete coincidence, I ended up there two nights in a row with two different groups of people. So the first night was just about me getting my footing and learning the building and tapping into little things here and there. The second night, I thought, all right, I'm going to go and revisit some of these things. So the group I was with that second night, I didn't really know these people at all. I'm sitting in base camp, eating a piece of pizza, and there's a set of dowsing rods sitting on the table. And this young woman comes up and grabs the rods, and she's standing there with them. It's clear to me she doesn't quite know what to do with them. I look at my phone. I have a message from someone who's at the Fairfield County Infirmary telling me that a guest of their flashlight tours had just come up to them and told them that they connected to the spirit of a little boy who said he needed my help, but he understood that I could not help him because I was at the jail helping Julie. And I'm thinking, I'm not really doing anything right now. I'm not helping anybody. I am contemplating another piece of pizza. That's what I was doing at the moment. So I'm so perplexed by this message. I read it out loud. And when I read it out loud, the rods this girl was holding in her hand crossed instantly. The poor girl was so startled, she went to throw the rods. And I said to her, please don't do that. I think you and I are about to go on an adventure together. So she's holding the rods, and I ask, will you please uncross the rods? They uncross. And I said, can we use crossed for yes? They cross again. Please uncross. My next question was, are you Julie? And they crossed. I said, okay. Julie, I'd like you to use the rods to point to me where you want me to go. What do you want to show me? So the rods turn toward the stairs. And this poor girl holding the rods is looking at me like, oh my God, what do I do now? Follow the rods. You and I are going on an adventure together.
I mean, this is why you came to this place, you know, like that's why you came to one of these events, right?
For sure. So the rods take us to the stairs. We go up the stairs. They point to a room in the sheriff's residence. And I go in and I recognize the room from the night before as a room that was set up with a child's bed and some toys. And I looked at that bed and I went, I remember looking at that bed last night and thinking, it's backward. The footboard was up against the wall. So the headboard was facing the wall. That's not right. And then when I looked at the bed again, I went, wait a minute. That is right. But it should be facing the window. So I moved the bed over. So the footboard was still up against the wall. But now the headboard's facing the window. And Julie gave me her whole story, how she'd been this sick little girl who was so ill she could not leave the house. And her mother had set her bed up to face the window so she could look out and feel like she was partaking in the real world. From there, I asked Julie, is there anywhere else you want me to go? She points to the stairs again. We go up one floor. She wanted to look up from the window in the matron's quarter. She wanted to look higher down below. So that ended that night. Over a year later, I go back and my first stop is Julie's room. The bed is gone. The furniture was gone. I didn't feel her. Couldn't connect to her on the rods. I started crying. I was so upset seeing that that bed was gone. So I managed to shake it off. We go upstairs to the matron's quarters. I walk into this little bathroom and I get this image of a woman, this very stern looking woman, just professional. She's put together. I'm like, all right, this was not an inmate here. I think she worked here. I think she worked with jail records. And then I hear someone yell from the other room, I think I found the bed. So I go running and I look in this closet and there is a bed that had been dismantled. It was not the same bed. The head and footboard weren't the same. So I'm now standing in this room with all these people and they're putting out equipment, cat balls and music boxes. And after a few seconds, I said, that music box is going to go off in 3, 2, 1. And it went off. And they said, how did you know that? I said, because I could tell someone was just about to walk into the room. And I went, it's her. It's the woman I was seeing in the bathroom a few moments ago. And one of my friends who is recently stepping into her psychic abilities said to me, is her name with an S sound? And I said, Contessa. And my friend screams, yes, that's it. Like she feels it in her heart when I said it. And somebody else in the room said, okay, can we call you Tessa? My head snapped and I looked at her and I said, no, that is for close friends and family only. You will address her as Contessa. Like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. It's like, I didn't mean to snap at you, but that's just where the energy was. So we start asking her some questions. She's lighting things up for us. We confirm that she worked there in the jail. She worked with records. There were some records that were not kept accurately, but she had to keep her mouth shut in order to ensure that her family was safe. And then when we start talking about her family, I said, did your husband pass away young? Yes. You had a son who left home and never returned. Yes. You had a daughter. Yes. She was a sick little girl. Yes. Her name was Julie. Yes. I had to grab onto the door. I thought I was going to faint. The energy was so strong. I don't think I've ever felt anything quite that strong. But the end result of that was taking Contessa upstairs to the room where Julie wanted to look out the big window so mother and daughter's spirits could come together. I'm almost tearing up thinking about it. It was so powerful.
So did you ever connect with Julie after that? Or you had never connected with her?
I did not. I did not connect with Julie, but I did have another very interesting experience that night. Do you know anything about the Licking County Jail?
I know I've heard it through my, podcasting and watching all the shows and stuff like that, but I don't really know anything about it, no.
One of the most well-known stories out of the jail was of a prohibition deputy whose name was Carl Etherington. Carl shot and killed someone in a prohibition raid. And they took him to the jail where an angry mob broke in, took him out into the street, and killed him. So I was told my first night there nobody really connects to Carl. All right, well, I'm going to go into his cell and try. Well, I did not connect to Carl. Instead, it's like I landed in his childhood home and connected to his mother. Over a year later, I go back. I'm sitting outside of Carl's cell doing an Estes session. And I keep saying over and over again, Clarence, find Clarence. Kept saying it. Found out later that night, Clarence was one of the number one people responsible for Carl's death. Clarence was held at the Ohio State Reformatory. Just that very day, I booked a trip to the Ohio State Reformatory. So the day I booked that trip, I'm told, find Clarence. So I guess I know who I'll be looking for when I go to OSR.
All right. I actually have a different kind of question here for you. It's with paranormal investigations, though. If money was no object and you could investigate anywhere in the world, where would that be for you?
Probably Alcatraz. I would love it. Even to just see it. I mean, it would make me happy.
So about, I'd probably say, man, what was it? About 14 or 15 years ago, I'd actually went to California because at one time before I met my wife and stuff, I was planning, you know, I think I told you before, I'm a musician and stuff. I've always loved like the 80s and the heavy metal stuff and hard rock and stuff. And, you know, it's very, very big out there in LA. So at one point, I was a correction officer at the time, but, you know, I wasn't involved with anybody. And I'm like, you know what? I think I might want to move out to California. So I went out to California 5 times in 1 year just to like check things out. And the first time I went to LA, but before going to LA, I was at LA for like 10 days. But before that, I'm like, you know what? I'm going across the world right now. I mean, across the country. I'm like, I gotta make every, cause it was my first time going. I gotta go to San Francisco also, you know? So I flew out to San Francisco. I was there for 2 days and I got to take a boat ride that went right next to Alcatraz. And when I tell you, man, like, I mean, I've worked in Sing Sing. Now I've worked in Rikers. Like I've worked in some pretty crazy places, but Alcatraz, seeing that place up close was insane. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a tour because I didn't even realize that you would, you know, I was still young. I didn't really realize that you had to get that stuff way in advance, you know? So unfortunately, right. I didn't get a tour, which I was kind of bummed about.
Oh.
I was really bummed that I couldn't get the tour, but maybe one day I'll find my way out there again and check it out. But yeah, it was super menacing, man. I mean, just, and it's crazy because you hear about these people that tried to escape from there and some people that did escape and they were never found. And when you see the waves crashing on that island, you're like, there's no way. Like, I mean, and even on like, I was there in the summertime. So it was a nice day. You know, it was just a little breezy because San Francisco is a little breezy. It's Northern California and stuff. But the waves were crashing on that island. Like, oh my, who would even attempt? I guess people that have multiple life sentences that just whatever, but it was nuts. I mean, just seeing that place up close. So yeah, no, I definitely, I like that answer. That's definitely a good answer for me. It would, I mean, I've said this a bunch of times, but for me, it would definitely be like Vlad the Impaler's castle, Dracula's castle.
That would have been my number two answer. That would have been my next answer.
Is, I mean, just like seeing pictures of that place is insane. And all the craziness and all the stuff that must have happened in that castle, you know, just the energy and the ambiance of that place has got to be insane. To be in there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That would have been my next answer for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Another place would be Gettysburg for me. And that's actually not terribly far from me, but maybe 3 hours away. So that's a doable one. But I mean, I've seen so many videos and so many cool things going out, you know, from Gettysburg. It would definitely be a cool place to check out.
I'm going to be there for the bash this year. I'll be doing readings for 3 days.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Have you ever been there?
I have not. It wasn't all that high on my list until just October of last year. I had a pretty wild experience October of last year. I don't know what your thoughts are on past lives, if you think we live past lives or not, and come back. But I do past life regression hypnosis for people. And some of the things that I've gotten through that have been absolutely incredible. So I very much do believe in past lives. And last October, I had an experience that dropped me headfirst into one of my own that I had no idea existed. It was probably one of the wildest experiences of my life. So I'd been out at the Civil War house at Billy Creek Village. Do you know anything about Billy Creek? So it's in Rockville, Indiana, just down the street from the Indiana State Sanatorium. Every October, I go out to the Indiana State Sanatorium and do readings for 10 nights during the Rockville Covered Bridge Festival. This past year, a friend of mine who's a Civil War reenactor wanted to go to the Civil War house at Billy Creek Village for a photo shoot. So all of the buildings at Billy Creek Village are historic buildings from around Indiana that were set for demolition, but instead of being demolished, they moved them and set them up in a village-style setting. There's a doctor's office, there's a cabin, there's a Catholic church, Baptist church, general store. So there's all these energies coming together in this one place. So a friend of mine wants to do this photo shoot. Not only is she a Civil War reenactor, she's also a photographer. That means there's no pictures of her because she's always the one on the other end of the lens. So she gets me a Civil War outfit. And we go to the house to do this photo shoot. I'm in the house putting this outfit on. And I'm thinking, there's electricity coming up through the floor of this house. I feel it in my feet. I feel it in my body. I don't know how this is possible. There's no electricity in this house. So I finish getting dressed. I walk through the house. I open the door to step out on the porch. My friend is sitting in a rocking chair. And I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, who am I looking at? I don't see my friend anymore. I am looking at an entirely different woman. Who am I looking at? So when she hears the door close, she looks up at me and immediately gets up and walks away. She just gets up, walks away, leaves. Really? I mean, we came here for this, for you to walk away? She comes back a few minutes later, comes up to me and she says, I am so sorry, but when I looked at you, I didn't see you. I saw an entirely different man. We spent 5 nights at that house uncovering the stories of the two people we saw. We have video footage from the 5 nights where our friends would have to leave because they'd get cold. But for she and I, it was like the fireplace of the house was lit. We felt like we were at home. For 5 days, I sat differently. I walked differently. I suddenly started eating with my left hand. I started writing with my left hand. I'm not left-handed. So I am really excited to get to Gettysburg this year.
Wow. Yeah. Now, you had mentioned hypnosis, right? Hypnosis has been like an insane obsession with me since I was a kid. Okay. I've always been interested in that field. I mean, to the point where I've read a million books on it. I've watched a whole bunch of things. I could probably do it if, you know, with all the stuff that I've been learning, you know, throughout the years since I was a kid, basically.
Right.
How does that, now you had said how that kind of ties into the past life regression, but does that also help you with your mediumship abilities as well? Like, do you do the hypnosis? How does that coincide with it, or does it?
I have. Some of the things I try to teach people in Circle, I've used some of those techniques through hypnosis to help put those in their subconscious. So they use those techniques more automatically.
Okay. Okay. And where did you learn hypnosis exactly?
Through the Hypnosis Motivation Institute, HMI. They're based out of California. One of the most interesting things I've done with hypnosis, I had someone contact me one day and ask me if I could hypnotize him to better play the bagpipes. And I was like, well, I'm not sure. So talk to me about what does it mean to better play the bagpipes? And he starts talking about working with a new teacher and she wants him to make these changes and change this hand position. I'm like, stop. Slow down and say that again. So now I'm taking notes. I'm writing down all these changes his new teacher wants him to make. It's like, there's your session to implant those changes in his subconscious. So when he goes to pick up those bagpipes, just the hands just land where they're supposed to land. That's what we did. And it was successful. But I had to think that one through. I don't know anything about playing the bagpipes.
Listen, nothing against people that play the bagpipes. I've been a musician for most of my life, but I don't understand it. Like everything that comes out of the bagpipes kind of sounds the same to me, you know? I mean, you know, to each their own, you know, there's music and art and everything. But for me, I never understood the bagpipes. I don't know.
One of my former ballroom dance students from many years ago, I teach ballroom dancing as well, used to tell this joke over and over again. It was just his favorite. What's the difference between the bagpipes and an onion? No one cries when you chop up the bagpipes.
I like that.
I think his wife was rather a big fan of bagpipe music. So every time he'd tell the joke, you could just see that she was not amused.
I mean, if you're not playing them at a funeral or like the St. Paddy's Day parade or something like that, I don't know. But, you know, again, to each their own, you know, you like the bagpipes, you know, you like the bagpipes, you know. So as far as your readings go, your mediumship readings, what's your technique exactly?
Specifically for mediumship, if I'm doing a one-on-one reading for someone, there is a tarot spread that I like to use. Now, I will more often than not turn the spread upside down and just talk before I turn any of the cards over. And as I talk, I can see when I'm hitting things with these people that resonate. And even before I get to the point where I've turned everything over, is the top of the spread, there's a card that represents the person in front of me and then whomever's coming through for them today. And I always feel like I have to emphasize to them, you know, you can sit here with me all day and say, you want mom to come through. And whether it's just coming through me individually or coming through in this spread, I can't promise you that's who we're going to get. So whoever comes through is who you're meant to get today. Sometimes after I've said everything I feel the need to say, just intuitively, we end up not even turning the spread. Sometimes they got the answers they needed. They got the closure they needed without me even turning the cards over. One of the best examples I can give of someone who set an intention, she told me she didn't have an intention for who was going to come through. And she lied to me. She did have an intention for who was going to come through. And I remember thinking to myself, if this person's mother doesn't come through, I'll faint. I did end up turning the spread. It was not her mother. It was a young man who'd sadly taken his own life, and I ended up tapping into some of the battles he faced while he was still living. Turned out that was her best friend, and it was the anniversary of his passing. After we got through the spread, wow. She looked at me and said, all right, I'm going to confess. I really wanted my mom to come through. And I just started laughing because I remember thinking, all right, you're not telling me this, but if your mom doesn't come through, I'm going to faint. Well, it's like mom was there. She was ready. Her best friend slid in there and is like, hey, can I have my moment? And mom was kind enough to take a step back and say, sure, we can do this another time. When I do group gallery sessions, like I just did a group gallery session at the Parkside, I had a group of people sitting in front of me, and I always do a segment where I just sit with my eyes closed and I just word vomit. I just say what's coming to me. And I deliberately do it with my eyes closed because if people are reacting, if I'm hitting things, I don't want to see it in that moment because maybe I'll go back to it later and add to it. I don't want to know what goes where until I actually ask. All right, what goes where? Let's debrief this. So it depends differently if it's a one-on-one, if it's a group. It's always a different experience.
For those looking to harness their abilities as a medium, as you teach and stuff like that, what kind of advice or first steps would you recommend to somebody that wants to start developing, you know, their abilities?
First and foremost, know how to stay grounded. Know how to protect yourself where whatever messages come through, whatever spirits come through are only going to be those who are positive and have productive, helpful insight to give. Put that out there as a boundary. And I also highly recommend connecting to a spirit guide, someone to help filter those messages through and to make sure you're receiving what you're supposed to receive and even to interpret things if need be. For instance, you know, if someone's grandmother is there, like, well, I'm going to throw out an image of a snowman. And well, if grandma gives me snowman, I might not know what that means. My spirit guide might take that image and turn it into something else. He might give me an image of a piece of broccoli instead. I'm like, oh, I know what that means. And I start talking and the person in front of me might say, oh yeah, my grandma and the snow. So, I mean, having a spirit guide, especially for mediumship, can be very helpful. Someone to connect to help bring those messages through and to ensure that they're what they're meant to be. Those are my big three: grounding, protection, spirit guide.
All this stuff, does it all pretty much start with meditation?
Yes, absolutely. Everything that I do involves meditation. When I, like at the Fairfield County Infirmary in a few weeks, I'll be leading my first psychic public hunt of the year. We do our public ghost hunts throughout the year, but I do a handful of psychic hunts where I lead the evening. We do different psychic techniques, different ways of connecting, and almost always I do a board session in one of the rooms. I start that board session with a meditation. I start every psychic development class with a meditation. Even when I do a group gallery reading, I start with a meditation that might be as simple as having everybody take 5 deep breaths together just to get them all on the same level. Meditation is a big part of my life and my practice.
Right. Yeah. I've been trying to do it for a while now, but it's difficult for me to, I actually just had this conversation with somebody else I interviewed a couple of days ago. It's hard for me to put things out of my mind, you know, like I'm like I told you, I work a million hours a week. I'm a correction officer. I got a lot of things rattling on up there, you know, a lot of stress, a lot of family things that, you know, it's difficult. Now I've read and what I've heard though, is that it's not really about clearing your mind. Is that true? Like, you're not really, like, if you have these thoughts, just let them kind of flow through, just think about them and just kind of let it go. Is that how you combat that?
100%. 100%. It's not so important to ensure that you clear your mind. It's what you do with the thoughts when they come in, because they are going to come in. That's what our human brain is meant to do. It's meant to think. It's meant to be a space for these things to roll around. When it comes to starting and building that practice, start small. Don't think you need to start by going and sitting in a room and being quiet for 30 minutes. Are you a coffee drinker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, not a lot, but I drink coffee once or twice a day.
Sit and drink a cup of coffee and try to make that the only thing you're doing at the moment. I mean, if thoughts come in, fine, but don't have the TV on. Don't be looking at your phone. Try to just sit and drink the cup of coffee. And as you're doing that, be mindful of how it smells, how it tastes, the way the cup feels in your hands. Then when you're done, even going to the sink and washing that cup by hand can be a meditative experience when you're noticing how all of these actions and movements feel. And you're really focused just on what you're doing in that moment. Start small.
Wow. That's good advice. Yeah. I gotta, cause that's one of the things, I mean, all the stuff that I'm interested in and everything, it's like, oh, well, you got to meditate. I'm like, it's not as easy as it sounds for me, you know, like, but I mean, everybody started somewhere with it. So, I mean, I'm sure if everybody else could do it or if a lot of other people could do it, I just have to put more work into it, I guess, you know?
Right. One of the projects I've got coming up, I'm getting ready to record and release an album of guided meditations that I've written for different purposes. So that's coming too.
Excellent. That's awesome. So before we close it out, I'm going to go into like this, I don't know why I labeled it as a lightning round, right? But it's really, it's really just to see what you think about certain topics and, you know, see where we kind of stand here.
Right.
Now, obviously, the first thing I said was ghosts and hauntings. We don't really have to go over that. We kind of know where you stand with that.
Right.
What about UFOs and aliens? Do you believe in it? Do you want to believe in it?
I do believe in it. I've not personally had any experiences. I can't recall anything in my life that I've seen that's solid enough for me to be able to make the claim that I've seen something. But I know so many people that have said they've seen something, people that I know personally and would have no reason to doubt them. And I think there's so much out there about this topic that, yes, I absolutely believe in it, but don't feel that I've had enough to say that I've had an experience.
Gotcha. What about cryptids, Bigfoot, you know, the dog man?
I do believe in cryptids. I definitely believe in Bigfoot for sure. Again, I can't say that I've seen Bigfoot. I've heard things when I've been out in the woods and in certain places that are inexplicable to me, that maybe it was Bigfoot, maybe it wasn't. But I think there's been enough glimpses and sightings and just overall evidence that I do believe in it very much. As for other cryptids, yeah, I think there's a reason why we say the things we say. There's something there. Bigfoot would be the number one on my list. I will say that I was investigating Crescent Sanatorium and Prison in Crescent, Pennsylvania, and standing outside at night, just staring off into the distance, and something ran by me. Something ran in front of me down the path. And I couldn't even tell you what it was. It wasn't human. It wasn't animal. I've never seen anything like it. And I'm just standing there like, is this like one of those things that I see as a psychic and nobody else would see? I've got some friends several feet away standing at the entrance to a building. And I hear one of them say, did you see that? I'm like, oh, okay. Everybody saw it. I'm going to go inside now. Because whatever it was, it made me feel like, I remember specifically what I said. I said, you're fine when you see it. The problem is when it sees you. And I don't know what this thing was, but I remember making that statement and just thinking, whoa, that's not okay. So yeah, I saw something out there and I don't know what it was, but it was something.
Right. I mean, for me, cryptids, I mean, look, the gorilla was once a cryptid, you know, like it's just, you know, an animal or a being that we just haven't, or that science hasn't completely discovered yet, you know?
Right.
They were cryptids, you know, I mean, that's just how they are. So, but yeah, I would say Bigfoot, I believe in Bigfoot for sure, because I just think there's way too many accounts of the big guy to
for sure,
you know, to discount everybody. So what about demonic possession?
Okay, here we go. I'm going to back up just a little bit and then I'll wade my way in.
Sure.
So all of these videos I see out there on YouTube of all these investigators going to these places and saying that they found demons, I have a really hard time with that. I've been to many, many, many places and I have absolutely never encountered a demon. Demons aren't personally part of my spiritual belief system, but I feel that if they were out there, they probably wouldn't be lurking in an abandoned haunted building waiting to jump out at someone. I think they would be out in the world creating the most chaos that they can. As for demonic possession, I helped someone through a very intense medical situation years ago. A medical situation that involved a 13-day intensive care stay and brain surgery. I mean, it was major. During this time, they were having psychogenic episodes, causing their body to react in certain ways that, in a way, mimicked seizure activity. But it wasn't seizure activity. There was nothing going on in the brain like that. So it was just the body's response to the stress that they were feeling. They were bringing this on as a psychogenic episode. And I think quite often people can do that and it can manifest in ways that may look like demonic possession. Do I think demonic possession is a real thing? Yes. Do I think it's as frequent as what we see out there on YouTube? Absolutely not. I think it's a real thing, and I think it's very, very, very infrequent. And I feel like those who take on that role of exorcists, whether it's in the sense of the Catholic Church. I know exorcism is a part of their doctrine. I recently had the privilege to be on a panel with someone who is an exorcist, not actively a part of the Catholic Church. And I even heard him say that out of the incidents he's had to investigate, many of them proved to be some sort of manifestation of mental illness. Mm-hmm. There were maybe one or two that were truly spiritual in nature. So do I think it's a thing? Yes, but I also think it's very, very, very rare.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I always say that there's definitely a fine line between, you know, mental illness and the demonic possession. You know, there's definitely a fine line there. And I mean, they even made a show. I don't know if you've ever seen the show Evil. That's what the show Evil was about. You know, that's right. That whole premise, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I definitely agree with you as well. I believe it's definitely a possibility, but you know, for the most part, I believe it is mostly mental illness. And I mean, even the exorcist, if that's what this person believes, the exorcist still might help them in a way where now the person feels that the demon is out of them. So that, you know, I mean, it could work in that way as well, you know, so.
Correct.
You know. Now, what about spells and curses? What do you think of spells and curses?
Well, I am a practicing witch.
Okay. Like as far as the Wiccan religion?
I don't specifically call myself Wiccan. That to me is a very specific spiritual path. For me, being a witch, I work with nature. I work with the seasons. I work with the cycles of the moon. I work with herbs and oils and incenses. I work with my hands. I create things. I put intention into everything that I do with my hands. And that to me is a difference between being a witch versus saying Wiccan, which is very much a specific spiritual belief system. There's things there about Wicca that I very much resonate with, very much. But there are certain things there that I don't resonate with, so I would never use that word for myself. If I've got to take a part of that and set it to the side and say, nope, that's not me, I don't do that or believe that, then I can't call myself that. But right. What I do with my hands, when I create something and put intention into something, I'll call myself a witch.
Gotcha.
I don't do a whole lot with curses. I mean, there's definitely some karmic retribution that can come from that if you're not careful. I will say, last year out at the Covered Bridge Festival, I was going to go meet some friends for lunch. I'm like, I'll be there in 5 minutes. I have to go do something. What are you doing? I'm like, just give me 5 minutes. I'll be there. So I get to the restaurant. They're like, what did you have to do? I'm like, I was just in the woods foraging for poison ivy. Like, what? the trunk of my car has been come to be known as my traveling apothecary, just filled with wild herbs. And I'm also a big gardener, so I grow a lot of my own herbs. But yes, to me, spells are intentions, and we can definitely accomplish a lot with our intentions. So yes.
And how about time travel and alternate universe and alternate realities and stuff like that?
I haven't had a lot of experience with alternate realities. So I'm going to say that I've got no reason to confirm nor deny that. I would absolutely not put my foot down and say, no, there's nothing to that. I haven't had experience there. As for time travel, I don't see why not. I mean, I've had some pretty strong experiences where I've astral projected my soul into a different location for a different purpose and then confirmed later on that I was there based on things I was able to say. You know, I'm not going to give the name of the location, but there was a reason why I felt I needed to do this with a haunted location. I needed to get in those walls and check something out. So I meditated and let my soul go there astrally. And I'm walking around this house until it's like I run into someone. I'm like, all right, well, I think I'll leave now. So I come back to my body. I wake up and I have a message on my phone from someone asking me if I wanted to go to that location that next day. So of course I do. I go to the location. They give us a code to let ourselves in. And I'm sitting there in this dark room. The next room is lit up. And the building caregiver arrives after a few hours. I see him walk in and I think, that's you I ran into last night. All right. So he walks into the lit room. I'm still in the dark room. And he's like, well, is there anything I can do for anybody before I go? And I spoke up from the next room and I said, yeah, before you go, I would really like a tour from you. And he starts to say, sure, no problem. Then he walks in the room I'm sitting in and he sees me. He takes one look at me, turns pale and says, I can't, I've got to go. And he turns around and leaves. So I don't know if it was the sense of, I've seen you before. Maybe I had this dream last night and you were in it. So if I can do that, if I can astral travel, I'm going to say yes to time travel. I've never gone backward or forward specifically, but my experience there, I'm giving that a big yes.
So I know this is going to be a much longer conversation as far as astral projection and stuff, but in that sense, though, I mean, because I had talked to somebody else, but I'm sure that there's different levels and there's, you know, the more you do it or the more you learn about it, you know, the better you get at it. But I mean, can you, if you astral project somewhere, can you move stuff, or it's just like your soul that's just going over there? Or like, do you think he saw you as like a spirit or something? Like, or, I mean,
he might have, or thought he dreamt me. I don't know. Either he thought he dreamt me, or maybe he, you know, maybe he did. I didn't think about that. Maybe he did see me as a spirit. And even though he's a caretaker in this very haunted property, just maybe he doesn't normally see them. Right. And maybe in that moment he thought he was seeing one and it startled him. So, you just gave me a whole new perspective on that night.
Well, that's the way, I mean, because I've never heard that somebody had actually, you know, possibly if he reacted that way, he must have, you know, if you would have just seen a person, you'd be like, all right, well, didn't I see you yesterday? Or, you know, you look familiar or something like that. But if he saw you as a spirit, like that would kinda, right, you know, say like, oh, well, that's probably why he was so scared, you know, so nervous when he saw you, you know, there.
I never even thought of that. That's very interesting.
But that's always interested me up to, you know, recently, especially about the astral projection and stuff like that. Cause I mean, that's just so interesting. And obviously, again, I know it's meditation and all that, so I'm gonna have to get myself into that, I guess.
You know, and recently too, I had an experience where it's like I just left my body and went somewhere in the middle of an Estes session. The session lasted about an hour, and then it took them another hour to get me out. It took them an hour to get me back because I was just gone. It's like my soul just up and went on an adventure. And I know where I went. I ended up going to Lilydale, New York, which is one of my favorite places on the planet. I mean, I was there recently coming back from an event at Wildwood. And I'd said, we have to stop at Lilydale on the way home. And my friend was like, you know, it's really cold out. It was like in the 20s. Like, I don't care. I can't be this close to Lilydale and not stop. I'll die. It's like, I'll die if I don't go. My soul loves that place so much. So it finds ways to go there, even when my meat suit's not going there, so to speak.
Yeah. And it's funny because you just said that too, because the person, see, I have my virtual reality headset. I love it. And I a lot of times what I'll do is there's certain, you know, social apps and stuff like that. And I'll do paranormal talks where I'll, you know, invite people in and, you know, we talk about paranormal experiences and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm no expert in any of it, but I've had a lot of experiences. So, you know, I tell my experiences and I like to hear other people's experiences as well, because it's good when you could tell your experiences and not get judged about it, you know, and that's what I've always tried to do. And that's what I've actually tried to do with this podcast too. That's the main reason why I started it, was because I wanted people to call in and tell their experiences. Unfortunately, nobody ever calls, but it's okay. It's okay. Maybe someday I'll get people calling, but you know, I like hearing other people's experiences. And this one guy had said, you know, that he astral projects. And I think he said he had just started doing it. But what he had said was, when you start to do it, don't be afraid. He said, because sometimes it might take a while to get back into your body. Sometimes it's difficult to do that. You know, is that part of it? Like, you have to, like, learn how to harness it a certain way? Or
I agree with that. Not only can it be difficult to get back in, but I think when you're starting to go for the first time, if you resist it, to me, the sensation that comes from resisting it is like the worst sleep paralysis ever. It's like you feel like you want to get up and you can't. You feel like you just suddenly weigh 3,000 pounds. And even the act of lifting your arm is just, it takes tremendous strength and energy because your soul is trying to go and you're resisting, you're fighting. So, I mean, yeah, getting back that first time can be a little challenging, but it will happen. And to me, even more so, when you first start to go down that road, if you resist it, it's going to hurt. I mean, it's awful. I don't think I've ever actually experienced sleep paralysis, but when I realized what I did experience a couple times was my soul getting ready to go on a journey and me fighting it, I'm like, oh, that's what that would feel like.
Yeah, I remember one time, this was years ago, it must have been maybe probably not even a year after my mom passed away, but I remember laying down on my living room couch. This was before I was married and everything and had my own house. And I remember I had thought it was something different. I had thought that, like, I was going up to see my mom. You know, but now that I think about it, it might have been that, because I remember I was going up, and I mean, it's amazing. I mean, obviously, you know, things could be dreams, but you could kind of tell when something's a dream and what's not. I mean, I've always been able to lucid dream all my life. So I kind of know when I'm dreaming, I know when I'm dreaming at all times.
Right.
You know, so I know that this wasn't a dream. And I remember going up, and then I don't know if maybe I got nervous or scared and I just slammed back down, and then I woke up and I'm like, oh, what the hell was that? You know?
Yeah.
And like I said, at the time I thought maybe it was like me going up trying to see my mom and then them saying, nope, 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 that's not happening. And they slammed me back down. But I mean, it could have been the astral projection now that I know more about it.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like it could have been. Yeah, I mean, the best way I can describe it is, you know, when you're starting to go, if you're resisting it, it's painful. I mean, that those two times that I can think of where now I know what was happening and I was fighting it, oh, I wouldn't do that again. Just that heavy feeling, horrible.
What do you have coming up in the near future? And for people that want to reach out to you about any of your services or anything that's going on, how could they do so?
I've got all kinds of things coming up in the near future. Just this coming weekend, I'll be out at the old Paulding Jail for a psychic fair. I've got 3 psychic public hunts at the Fairfield County Infirmary in Lancaster, Ohio. First one is in May. I will be at Parapsychon at the Ohio State Reformatory in May doing readings for 2 days. I will be part of the Trifecta event at Fort Duffield, end of May, early June. I'll be doing a gallery reading there. I've got my own psychic events at both Bill Manor, end of June, and the Ross House in Bel Air, Ohio. I have another one of those out there in November. I've got a couple other projects going on at the Paulding Jail. I'll be doing a gallery out there, another couple of psychic weekends. I feel like I've got to be missing something. But other than that, I'm the house psychic for the Fairfield County Infirmary. So I'm there for as many of their public events as I can be, offering readings. I do readings and teach classes at a place called The Magical Druid in Clintonville, Ohio. On my Facebook page, that's the easiest way to reach me. You can send me a message for a reading. You can look at and purchase my Ouija board on my Facebook page. Look up the hashtag The Paranormal Medium. You can find a lot of my stuff that way. And I'm also on TikTok. So I haven't done a whole lot with it yet. Couple of live sessions, but that's about it. I'm more of a writer. I have more of a presence on Patreon. I'm much more of a writer. And I've actually got 3 books that I'm getting ready to put out there too.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. How far down the road do you have those coming out, you think?
I'm hoping 2 out of the 3 will be this fall.
Excellent. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So when you teach and you know, give these sessions and stuff like that, do you do it virtually as well, or it's just in person?
I do both, depending on what it is. Like some of my sessions out at the Magical Druid, I'll do a virtual session for people. Usually my 3-hour psychic intensives like part of my event coming up at Bill Manor, end of June, I'll do a 3-hour psychic development workshop. Then we'll take a little break for dinner. I'll do a 2-hour gallery and seance session. We'll take an hour break, and then we'll have the overnight investigation. So that's how I like to run those events. Usually that 3-hour psychic development workshop, I won't do that video. It's like, I want people there. They're diving in, hands-on. And I mean, these people really paid for these tickets. So it's not something I'm going to share later. I want those who paid for that ticket to have the experiences they're meant to have.
Well, listen, man, thank you so much for coming on, especially in such short notice. This was awesome. And we'll definitely talk more in the near future, for sure.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you to Mr. Christopher Lee Jansen for sitting down with me and talking to me about everything that he has going on and all of his great abilities and stuff. You guys are definitely going to be hearing more from him, because I'm trying to make him a regular on the show as well. You know, maybe once a month, or, you know, a few times or whatever, to find out what he's up to, because he does a lot of stuff for the paranormal community. And as you could see, he definitely knows quite a bit. So, and very, very cool, very, very interesting dude. So thank you again, Chris. Thank you to everybody that has been listening. Or if you're a new listener, you know, welcome aboard. Like I said, next week, Friday the 13th, will be our season 5, episode 1 premiere. And it's going to be awesome, guys. I know you're going to enjoy it. Definitely, if you have a paranormal experience, give me a call at 845-600-0744. Or you could email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. Also, I just want to give, I know I say it a lot, but they deserve this a lot. Thank you very, very much to my boy Edgegrave Dave for always being there and for always giving me awesome, awesome content, as well as my other buddy, John Wright, for doing the same and keeping us informed about different things and giving us his expert opinion on everything from Bigfoot to UFO whistleblowers and paranormal stuff and everything. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, thank you to my co-host, Natman, for being there as well. I hope I get you on more shows when you feel better. Thank you to Ken. You'll be hearing from him next week. So I hope you guys enjoy it. And have a great week, everybody. Later.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. And thank you to all of my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744. Or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen.